I'm Lee Macarigurio, and you're listening to the Falcon's Nest Podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Falcon's Nest Podcast. I'm Lee Macarigurio.
And I'm Logan Grigo. Here on the Falcon's Nest, we connect you to our school, talk to some of our amazing students and members of our community, and share info and tips to improve your physical, mental, and emotional health.
Now, as you could probably tell from the title, this episode is focused on the health side of things, because we're taking a deep dive into addictions and their impact on Canadian youth.
Now, you've probably heard about the various addictions that exist in our country. Alcohol, cannabis, opioids, social media, sex, and gambling, to name a few. But today, we're not focused on the what. We're focusing on the why, the where, and the how.
Why do young Canadians end up in these situations? Where will these addictions lead to? And how can you help someone who is facing addictions?
And without further ado, let's answer those questions.
Firstly, let's talk about the pathways to addiction. We often hear that youth use substances, gamble, or abuse technology because they believe it will be fun or it will help them deal with stress or pain. These are things you've probably heard in your health classes, but there are underlying causes to these beliefs.
It's not a secret that youth have had it tough. The rising cost of living has had a major impact on the health of young Canadians from 2016 to 2022. Hopefulness has declined by 15% in Canadians between the ages of 15 and 29. In addition, many young Canadians are being forced to sacrifice dreams or goals due to financial constraints, like having children or owning a home.
Youth mental health has been on a steady decline in Canada since 2003 due to affordability and social issues like climate change and healthcare access. It's very clear that youth in Canada are facing unprecedented challenges and try to cope with these challenges they might turn to substances.
Other factors can put youth on the path to addiction, many of which are uncontrollable. Recent studies have shown that adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs for short, increase the risk of substance abuse later in life. ACEs are stressful experiences like abuse, neglect, and dysfunction or violence in the household that occurs before the age of 18.
These experiences can lead to children developing internalizing behaviors. Now, internalizing behaviors, you might have not heard this term before, but they are negative behaviors that are focused inward. They include sadness, withdrawal, shyness, and inhibition.
These behaviors are not necessarily negative all the time, but they can lead to negative outcomes like impulsive risk-taking, aggression, anxiety, and depression, which in turn are associated with increased substance usage and abuse. Now, this isn't to say that being shy means you will most be more likely to develop an addiction. It simply means that negative experiences early in your life can cause a ripple effect that can lead to substance abuse.
And sometimes it isn't even like stuff that happens in your life, it's stuff that happens before. Like, you see these biological factors such as genetics or differences in brain development that play a role in the risk of developing addictions. And your environment does the same. Interestingly, Canadians with the lowest incomes report less heavy drinking compared to Canadians with the highest incomes. But those with lower incomes are more than twice as likely to be hospitalized for conditions attributed to alcohol. This may be because Canadians with lower incomes have less access to healthy food, social support, and resources to reduce stress or cope.
It is clear that many factors contribute to addiction among Canadian youth. But once addictions begin, why do they continue, even when the user knows that they need help? Usage can sometimes be related to external stressors. For example, 40% of youth across Canada reported that their usage of alcohol and cannabis increased during the COVID-19 pandemic, and unhealthy usage of technology also climbed during the same period.
In addition, many youth want to seek help regarding their addiction, but don't feel like they can. A recent survey showed that 3 out of 4 Canadian youth experiencing mental health symptoms, which are often related to addiction, did not access services for help. This was often due to a belief that they could handle it themselves, a lack of knowledge about the services available, or cost.
There is also the issue of stigma. While youth are generally more accepting and tolerant towards people dealing with mental health or addiction challenges, 68% still believe that there is a stigma towards those with alcohol abuse. Due to this stigma, which can exist at many levels of society, youths may not feel comfortable admitting that they need help.
All right, so now that we know more about the pathways to addictions, let's switch gears. Okay, so let's talk about impact. Now, Logan, I'm going to throw some stats at you. Approximately 77% of Canadian youth have consumed alcohol. 41 have used cannabis, 15 have used illegal substances such as cocaine and meth, and 56 of women ages 18 to 22 are considered to be clinically addicted to their phones, as well as a third of men in the same age group. Now, we all know that addictions to these things can cause serious, irreversible physical and mental harm, but what are some of the other impacts addiction can have?
Well, the key thing to understand here is that there are two types of addiction, though they often occur simultaneously. The first is physical addiction, which is when your body becomes dependent on the substance or behavior to function. This type of addiction also means that your body will build tolerance to the substances or behavior, and that means it'll require larger doses. It is connected to the withdrawal syndromes many face when they first quit their addiction.
The other type, and the one we're going to focus more on for today, is a psychological addiction. And this is when cravings for a substance or urges to perform a certain behavior are emotionally driven. So when someone is psychologically addicted, their life begins to revolve around the substance or behavior. Now, the link between these two types of addiction is that the person no longer feels like they have a choice about using a substance or doing a behavior.
And when your life revolves around addiction, there are more serious consequences. Like, you might commit crimes to acquire more substance, like theft or serious offenses. That will stay on your record for life. When you're pursuing an addiction, you'll have less time and less energy for things like education or employment. Many addictions also create a financial drain, which only worsens the conditions that have led people to addiction. It's a ruthless cycle, especially when people feel like they have no choice or don't realize they are truly addicted to something.
There's one other consequence, and to me this is the most serious. I don't know about you, but your relationships also seriously suffer when you're dealing with addiction. I mean, you look at, there's changes to physical and mental health, such as a reduction in sleep or mood changes that can cause problems in relationships with family and friends. And it's tough because maintaining relationships or building new ones becomes harder, for you have less time to invest in them because you're focused on that substance or that behavior. And that's not your fault that that's where your focus is, but it's the reality of it. So if an addiction continues to grow in intensity and length, there's this very strikingly real chance that relationships with loved ones could be seriously damaged.
That's some very important information to know, Liam. Now let's talk to someone with firsthand experience seeing the impacts of addictions on their community.
So to talk about some issues about addictions that we've discussed so far in the episode, we're joined here by Mr. Leatherdale. How's it going, Mr. Leatherdale?
Really well, thanks.
Great to have you on. So for the few listeners that don't know about you, tell us a bit about yourself. How did you end up here as a teacher, and what courses do you teach here?
When I first went to university, I got a psychology degree, and then I started working in youth justice in North Battleford and then in Saskatoon. Decided to get an education degree and started teaching in custody, and then got a contract with Saskatoon Public Schools. Was at the Bridges program for kids that struggle, which was a good transition for me with working in the justice system with kids. Went right to Mount Royal in the building and then transferred to Marion Graham after I did my master's in administration. So that's kind of how I ended up here.
What's your experience working with youth facing addictions, both in and out of MMGCI?
Okay, so in MMGCI, not so much. I generally leave that to student services and administration and stuff like that. I do get kids that come and talk to me from time to time because they know of my work in the justice system and things like that. But, you know, we have professionals here to handle the brunt of that work. I don't mind having conversation with kids and pointing them in the right direction. But definitely I make sure that admin and student services are involved. So outside of MMGCI, in youth justice, I would say that the vast majority of kids are dealing with addictions issues, and sometimes it's causes them to be in custody, whether it's committing property crimes to pay for their addiction, whether it's, doing things when they're under the influence of drugs and alcohol that causes them to be in custody. But it's pretty rare for someone to come into youth custody that doesn't have addictions issues. So it's kind of at the forefront with all the work that we do over there.
What factors do you think contribute to young Canadians becoming addicted to those substances or to those behaviors?
There's a wide variety of issues, obviously. Socioeconomic status, can be a factor. Kids just not feeling like they belong or fit into society, expectations, school, things like that. Dealing with trauma, a lot of kids self-medicate. And if you don't know what that means, essentially, they might be dealing with anxiety, depression, trauma, PTSD. And rather than going to a medical professional and getting things that can help them, whether it's drugs or counseling or whatever, they just self-medicate. Because if you hurt all the time, sometimes drugs and alcohol make it so that you don't hurt. And even though it's temporary and doesn't fix the cause of your hurt, at least you get the relief. that's not unique with kids. Adults do the same thing. So, you know, I think that's probably the biggest factor. Kids dealing with trauma and abuse and, you know, not feeling very good about themselves, plus maybe some actual psychological disorders, and they just self-medicate.
Mm-hmm. And how should we educate youth on these factors and the risks of addiction overall?
Well, I mean, we live in a society that kind of glorifies the use of alcohol and use of certain drugs and especially appealing to young people more so than older people. The glorifying of it anyways, as you get older, the glorifying doesn't really hold much water. Right. But the younger you are, it does kind of factor into some of your decisions, peer pressure and things like that. You know, I'm a 50-year-old man. If someone says, hey, you need to try this, and I say, no, I do not. It's a little different than, you know, when you're a teen and you're trying to fit in and maybe things like that, right? Or pressure at a party. I mean, just knowing that if you don't feel comfortable doing something, don't do it. And even if you do feel comfortable doing something, just thinking about like, what are the long-term consequences? I know that's hard for young people. Like young people tend to live in the moment a lot more than adults. You know, it makes it tough to kind of say no, but, and, you know, while we're young, we'll make mistakes. Now's time to live. And I buy that to a certain extent, but at the same time too, it can have some longstanding consequences. So, I mean, just learning the effects of stuff. I know like in Health 9, you learn some stuff, and then there's other classes that you learn some more in. But, you know, unfortunately for a lot of people, it's life experience. And you, unfortunately, it doesn't matter how much life experience you want to have at 15, 16, 17, you just don't have very much. So that's kind of where it lands, I guess.
And another thing is, you know, you're our football coach here at the school. You're really involved with athletics at the school. Would you say sports and other kind of physical activities could be another kind of outlet for these people who, instead of self-medicating, they can do that?
Yeah. I've always said, like, idle hands, right? If you're bored and you don't have anything to do and you look for stuff to fill your time, you know, I've seen kids scroll on their phone so much, they must have gotten to the end of the internet. Like where, like you've now seen everything, right? So then, you know, now I'm bored. What am I going to do now? Well, you know, video game, whatever, but athletics definitely. And whether it's an individual sport or a team sport, you know, having that opportunity to participate in those things and make some like face-to-face connections rather than just texting. And you know, I have my famous line, snap face and tick chat or whatever. And I say that in class all the time. Just having face-to-face connections, like interpersonal connections and competing and feeling better physically. Like the thing with exercise and sport is sometimes it doesn't feel very good, but after it, usually you feel a lot better. There's mornings, you know, and I'm getting older. It's harder to get up in the morning and do stuff, but I get up in the morning. On days I get up and go to the gym, I feel better at work than the days that I don't. Even though like I'm dragging my butt out of bed and just like, oh, I just want to roll over and fall back asleep. But I'm so grateful when I do. I feel so much better. Like when I walk out of that place, I feel so much better. And it's the same. You know, I don't need to replace that with anything else. And you know, now's the time to participate in those things. You think you're busy now, wait. You know, you think you're busy now, just wait. You know, getting in those good life habits now is a really good time to do it.
As a law teacher, how can addictions end up landing students in troubles with the law?
Well, like I said earlier, doing things that you wouldn't normally do. Intoxication is not a defense for a crime. It can be a mitigating factor, meaning that, you know, if something really, really bad were to happen and you were intoxicated, it might be a lesser charge, but it's not an excuse. It's like, I was drunk, or I was high. Okay, so that obviously is a factor. And then, you know, the legality of doing it itself, like there's maybe a couple of students in this school that can legally consume cannabis, right? Mm-hmm. I know from what I smell and what I see and whatever, that there are students in this school that use cannabis. Okay. I'm not dumb. I don't have blinders on. So there's a legality there. Is it as serious an offense as it was when your parents were in school? No, absolutely not. It's treated similarly to alcohol now. Depending on what you're doing, and sometimes the people that you have to associate with in order to participate in some of these things are a bit of an issue too, right? So, I mean, there's pitfalls. I just suggest, like, if there's something that you like to do, wait until it's legal. I know not everyone's going to wait until it's legal. That is my number one advice. And if you find that if you do partake and you act the fool, maybe you should consider not doing it just because, you know, you could end up in trouble. I've seen so many kids that have never been in trouble before that come through the doors of Kilburn Hall. And it was like, man, I did something that I've never done before. And now I did this act,
right,
which has landed me here.
That's a very good point. And one other, you know, you talked a little bit about how much kids are scrolling on their phones in recent years. And that's actually a topic that a lot of our viewers requested was phone addiction. Mm-hmm. So how do you think that's affected society and the school environment overall?
Well, I mean, there's a million ways it can go. Like, phone can be a useful tool. It can also be a terrible distraction. People who have been in my class, I don't have like a super duper strict cell phone policy, but I do use, you know, my words to, you know, kind of call people out. And I usually try and make a joke out of it, but still get my point across. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
You know, and when it's time that I absolutely need to have everyone's attention, I make sure that I get it. That being said, I mean, social media is a blessing and a curse for sure. I'm at my age, I think it's more of a curse than a blessing, but there are some positive things to it, I guess. But it definitely does affect what happens in the classroom for sure.
Well, what services do you know of that are like either through the SPS district or in the wider community that youth can use to help themselves with an addiction?
Well, obviously, step one, always, if you're a member of Marion Graham or any other school, student services is the first place to go,
right?
Because they have the ability to connect you with anyone, right? Like, they have all the connections, whether it's through social services, addictions, you know, health, private counseling, you know, they've got all those things at their fingertips. They're used to it. They deal with it on the regular. I would absolutely start there. If you are concerned that, you know, you don't want anyone in the school to know about something that you're dealing with, I totally understand that. But I would go there first. If you are in that situation, though, mental health and addictions numbers, like, all you have to do is Google it. You'll find it, like SASU mental health and addictions, province of Saskatchewan, whatever. And you can get things started that way. I will say, if it is something that is imminent and like you are dealing with right now, going through the school, you will, like a school counselor calling there probably moves things a little bit quicker. I could be wrong. But, and then, I mean, if you're dealing with like a really bad addiction or an overdose situation, I mean, that's the hospital, that's 911.
Right.
That's a lot of great information, Mr. Leatherdale. Thank you for sharing all of that. And some of those numbers you talked about are also linked in the description of this episode, so be sure to check that out. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us. We hope our listeners learned a lot. And I know me and Logan certainly did.
Mm-hmm. All right. My pleasure.
People often think of the physical and mental impacts of addiction, and while these are serious and important, it is also important to note the social impacts on your daily life. Now, we were just talking about relationships, and let's stay in that area. One question many people have is how they can help a friend or family member who is facing addiction.
The key thing to remember if you're taking part in intervention, helping a loved one find support services, or even just having a conversation with them, is to be supportive. Even if they might have hurt you in some way, it's important to understand that they are facing some serious challenges and that they need to hear encouragement.
And earlier, we talked about how stigma and lack of support are contributing factors that can lead to addictions, beginning or continuing. If you are not supportive and positive when trying to communicate someone facing addiction, you are contributing to the stigma.
It is important to talk with people facing addiction to try and understand their why. Now, this why might be one of the reasons we discussed earlier in the episode, or it might be something totally different, because everyone has unique circumstances. But understanding the roots of their addiction will make it easier to talk with them about it, or suggest healthy ways to address any problems they're facing, and help them find the best services or supports for treatment.
You should also refrain from forcing someone to talk about it, or access services. Having said that, if you are concerned about them, try talking to a teacher, counselor, family member, or another trusted adult. Depending on the situation, they might have experience and knowledge that can be used to help improve the situation.
Now, if you're looking for rehabilitation services or another kind of support for someone, be sure to research the services in your province or territory, because youth often fall into this in-between zone where some services consider them to be children and others classify them to be adults. So it can be tough to figure out what services that they're allowed to access. So research and communication with local health bodies are both key to informed recommendations or referrals.
While your friend or family member is recovering, be an encouraging and supportive presence. Take them to appointments, don't invite them to events or activities that might trigger their addiction, and let them know that you are there for them. Be sure to encourage this person to engage in healthy activities. Like, for example, if they're trying to use their phone less, remind them to turn off non-essential notifications or make the phone less appealing sometimes by turning on, for example, grayscale mode. Sometimes these little reminders can have a big impact. Remember, nobody can do it alone.
Well, Logan, that about wraps up our main topic for this episode. And listeners, if you are dealing with addiction or other health challenges, there are immediate supports for you. All Saskatchewan residents can call the Saskatchewan Healthline at 811. Indigenous people can call the Hope for Wellness Helpline at 1-855-242-3310. And youth can connect to the Kids Help Phone by texting CONNECT to 686868 or calling 1-800-668-6868. And there's some other resources in the description of this podcast episode as well. You can access if you need those supports.
Well, that's all for this episode, and thank you so much for listening. We hope this information we shared today is helpful and helps you in the future. And make sure to remember, you are never alone.
Keep an eye out for more Falcons Nest podcast episodes coming out pretty soon. And in the meantime, fly high, Falcons, and see you next time.